This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Yes, indeed. Bill Rock, you got it right. John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning.
Good morning. Going to be hot?
Wait a minute here. I got a problem with your microphone. Let me try this one. Go ahead.
That better?
That's better. All right.
That's better.
Yep.
Going to be hot. Thunderstorms are dangerous. I don't know if you heard coming through where I live this morning at 5.
Big thunderstorm.
Yeah, 5:15. It was very impressive.
Some more this afternoon, but in between it's going to be nice, but it is going to be hot. You're absolutely right.
And
the pools are open.
The pools are all open. McCarran Pool, the enormous pool and absolutely gorgeous. Built in 1936. City in the 70s just let it fall apart, been closed for a long time.
It's enormous. It's the size of a football field.
Well, you know, but you got to remember that given the density of New York City, it's a square inch of water per person is probably not a big deal. And they kept the character of it, but with landmarks, did some things that made it function better. So there's going to be an ice skating ring on the. There's a place called the beach, but it's really just a big open cement area that's going to be able to be flooded and be an ice skating ring in the winter. They've got a weight training room and all that sort of stuff. Indoors, so it's instead of just a swimming pool open 10 weeks a year, it is a part of McCarran Park, which is really gorgeous, and that'll be used all year round. And you look, we stood on the roof of the building that's the entrance and the locker rooms kind of stuff for the pool and looked around, and every place you saw brand new apartment buildings going up. You have no idea what that does to property values in the neighborhood. All of a sudden, this part of Greenpoint Williamsburg, which was sort of down in its luck, is one of the hot places to live. Everybody wants to live there.
I mean, what the city has done, and using this as the example, is sort of that shovel-ready stimulus thing that was a couple of years ago.
Which everybody talked about. Nobody ever had anything shovel-ready.
We did, and we
used them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point. I mean, nothing happened with the stimulus thing, but this is the kind of thing that revitalizes.
And this pays for itself many times over. The extra property taxes that will come. So for the rest of the city, they say, why should we put our money in it? You're going to make money on this. You're going to get more tax revenues than what you had to make in the investment. And it adds to the city's, you know, attractiveness for people that come here, bring businesses here. And there were 11 pools built, I think it is, by Robert Moses when he was the Parks Commissioner.
Back in 36.
And Fiore LaGuardia was the mayor. And I was told yesterday that it hit 106 degrees one day back there in 1936.
With no cool rooms.
They didn't have air conditioning.
The pool was the cool room.
Pool was the cool room. And, you know, so they built 11 pools. And I think the other 10 all have stayed open. Actually, the Daily News had a guy who went and swam in all of the pools.
It must take a lot of lifeguards to do McCarran Park. I mean,
keep in mind, it's not that deep. You can stand any place in it. And I don't think they have fatalities. But, yes, there were a half a dozen lifeguards on towers. It's a big pool, so half a dozen isn't that many. Take a while for them to swim to you.
Did you read this morning in one of the papers, I can't remember which one, but there's a lifeguard shortage in the United States?
I don't think in New York City this year, but it's always been a struggle. And every year I go to Coney Island, I did it about a month ago, to welcome the new lifeguards, and they train and all that sort of thing.
Young people looking for work, it's a great summer job.
I never was a lifeguard.
Nor was I, but all my kids were.
Yeah, it is a great summer job, and you get a chance to flirt with the girls or the boys or whatever, and a lot of female lifeguards in this day and age were not, I think, when I grew up. The only thing, John, is that we put them on the beaches. There's places where you can swim. We have lifeguards in places where you shouldn't. And every year, and we had it recently.
Already, yeah.
Yeah, already. I mean, I don't know what possesses people. The ocean is dangerous. It just really is. And swimming pools at night, sometimes the kids try to sneak in and swim, and there's no lifeguards. And, you know, there's always
playing
a tragedy.
Fire. Yeah. Your reaction to the Supreme Court ruling yesterday?
Well, I don't think anybody that I ever talked to or read about predicted that John Roberts would be the swing vote. I actually know him. There's a new museum in Washington, about 4 or 5 years old now, called the Newseum, and it's a museum to the news business. And at its opening, ribbon cutting, I think there were 9 speakers. I was the second of nine. I think Arthur Salzberger Jr. was the first. The last one was, and it went on forever. John Roberts, the head Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, is the last speaker, and he always endeared himself to me. He stood up and he said, "To be a good speaker, you have to know your audience." So let me say, in conclusion.
Well, that's cute.
But nobody expected that.
That's
and
cute.
I think it says, look, he's you hear all sorts of conspiratorial theories. He looked at the Constitution, and he may be very conservative, but he says, this is what I think the Constitution says, what the Founding Fathers meant. And he wrote it, regardless of the politics. Good or bad, at least it takes away the argument that this law is unconstitutional. It does not mean that future governments in Washington can't change the law or repeal it or something. I think what is clear is whether you have this law or not, we have a public health medical crisis in the country. We cannot afford what we have. Every one of the metrics are going in the wrong direction. People live longer means you've got to pay their health care costs keep going up. It's good if they're living longer, but from an economic point of view, that is really hard. The returns for pensions and funds and health care funds and that sort of thing have not been there. The stock market's done nothing in the last 5 years, 4 years. Total return zero for anybody. We all assume we're going to make eight, and they say, oh, we're going to reduce it to seven. Seven is as laughable as 8%. The obesity is taking off here, and that is really a cost burden for everybody, because you tend to get things that you can get medical treatment for, but they go on forever. So it's enormous expense. One of the reasons we're starting to focus on obesity across the country, lots of people are. And we are going to provide health care for everybody. It gets lost in this. If you are really sick and you show up at a hospital in New York City, and I assume every place in the country, you're going to get treated. Somebody's got to pay for that. Now, you can have everybody pay for it. You can have, and that you do that through, let's say, the tax system. You can have only a handful of people pay for it. That means the people who support that hospital, although the federal government gives a lot of money through Medicaid and other things to hospitals. But we're all going to pay for it. And whether we pay for it one way or pay for it another is the argument, but that sort of gets lost. Oh, no. For example, the precondition, insurance companies have to take you if you have a precondition, previously existing condition. And people say, why should an insurance company have to pay? If you come in sick, why would any rational company write in? Well, that person is going to show up at the hospital and get care. Now, the question simply is, how are we going to allocate the cost? And it's really allocated across everybody anyways. So I think it's more even than that. It's just, what are we going to call the allocation? A lot of it is verbiage. We say, well, there's another 30 million people covered. Yes, but in some senses, they were probably covered anyways, because if they showed up in the emergency room. And yes, they could go and get prophylactic care because the insurance would cover it now. But it tends to be a lot of young people get covered all of a sudden who probably don't go for annual checkups and don't have real medical problems and don't really cost you anything, or older people who don't know how to get into the system. So I'm not sure, after all of the yelling and screaming and all the politics around this, there's really any great change. Congress passed a bill, President signed it, questioned in whether or not it was constitutional. Supreme Court looked at it, voted 5-4 yes. End of story.
Let me take a break.
That's democracy.
All right, let me take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you about the immigration decision as well from the Supreme Court, okay? But let me take a break right here, do a little business. 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling here. The Supreme Court's decision yesterday, well, we've been through that one earlier last week. We had the immigration question. Tuesday, I guess.
Supreme Court, it got involved in whether or not Arizona could have its own laws. And I think what it basically said was that federal laws preempt state laws, which for something like immigration, couldn't agree more.
Of course.
You can't run a country where everybody's got their own laws on immigration. This country's immigration system is horrendous. It's broken. It's an outrage. We are keeping we are educating people, and they're going and starting businesses overseas and creating jobs overseas that we need here. And all because we're just afraid to take one vote in the Senate and the House and pass a bill that says if they get a graduate degree in science or math or whatever here, engineering, technology, they should be, we should pray for them to come here. Other countries pay them to go to their countries. Literally, they give them bonuses and that sort of stuff. And we are keeping them out. It is the most, it's hard to understand how any rational society could deliberately start, try to shoot itself. And it is so obvious. And I think, unfortunately, it is sort of a symbol of how partisan Washington is at the moment. I think both sides agree, but they can't even be seen to come together to do something they both agree on. This is the most biggest no-brainer. So that's one
and it
thing.
It seems fairly easy, at least conceptually
John, it
easy.
It is so easy, it isn't even close. I mean, this is just, there is no rational rationale for not giving people that we need in this country the ability to come here. And then there's something else that happened this week in immigration. The president, which he believes he has the right to do, said that they are not going to deport some people, their kids who were brought here before they were 16. So you can say they broke the law. Come on.
I agree.
Five-year-old kid. It's
the
parents maybe that broke the law, but it certainly wasn't the kid.
Right.
So, anyways, if you are, and if what he said is, and they haven't done the regulations. So when people say, "Well, what do I do right now?" The answer is, don't do anything. Don't get involved. Don't raise a flag. Just sit back. Do what you've been doing. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. At least for a while. And then in the next few months or 6 months, whatever it is, they will write regulations. But what the president said, if you were brought here before the age of 16, if you're now 30 years old or less, if you've had good moral character, in other words, no arrest or anything, if you're in high school, you completed high school, you have a GED, then they will not deport you. You are not, it's not a pathway to citizenship that you're going to get, but you will get a work permit. But the INS has to do it on a case-by-case basis, and that's what they've got to write the regs for. And it's just, you know, Congress can't, number one, the president, his administration has deported more people than the last three or four presidents put together. Nobody complained on the right when he did that. He's doing it by regulation rather than changing the law. So here he's doing something else. This makes so much sense. Come on, these kids didn't do anything. Oh, incidentally, also, if you served in the military, trying to put your life in, your life on the line to defend America, that you'd qualify as well. It's... All of this is because we have a set of laws, an immigration that I describe as suicidal. This is national suicide. We are, and you'll never get back some of these things. We worry, we have the greatest higher education system in the world, except that the best, they're getting their PhDs, and then we won't let them stay here. So they go overseas and they go to work for other universities, making those universities better. And pretty soon we're not even going to have that. I formed this organization with Rupert Murdoch. You say, why Rupert? He's not exactly liberal, but he's an immigrant, and his company is a worldwide company, and they understand you have to. Companies all over this country, they have jobs, they can't fill them, and people could start new businesses, all of which would create other jobs for Americans, and we're just not doing it.
Yep, I will refuse to do anything about it because they're scared to death of the political realities, and that's not what you're called. Leadership. You and the city council got together on a budget, $68.5 billion. Dollars. Those things that you suggested in the past that might have to be cut were not. There were no tax increases.
Well, keep in mind,
how did you get that managed? No, how did you make that managed?
Well, keep in mind, we have cut. This year we had another $1.5 billion program to eliminate the gap. That's built in there. We didn't wait until the end of the year to do it. And we still have a $2.5 billion or $3 billion, something like that, deficit plan for 2014, a year from now. So we're going to have to start addressing that in the fall and get ahead of the game.
How'd you get away around the $1 billion taxi medallion issue?
We are assuming in this budget and in a preliminary one for 2014 and 2015 that those medallions will be sold over 3 years. And we put some money in this year and some into 14 and some into 15. We've been sued in court. We think we'll win. Governor Cuomo has been very helpful with the legislature and committed to get this done. So hopefully we will proceed through the court system expeditiously and then get this out there. Remember, the taxis are about giving more taxis for people who need them in Midtown. The taxis are about giving taxis for 4.5 boroughs that have never had taxi service, not legal service anyways, where you have all of the things like GPS so you can find your luggage and, you know, a meter that so you know you're not getting taken advantage of, when you, all of those things. And it's revenue for the city. And some of the watchdogs have said, oh, it's one-shots. Well, that's true, but there's always a whole bunch of one-shots. And when you're doing, when there's lots of things, it's not a unique thing. And what are we supposed to do? Throw the money away? Of course we're going to spend it. Can we cut more? Yes, you can cut more, but budgets are about, and I thought Chris Quinn from the city council said it very well, budgets are about choices and what we stand for. And we decided we wanted to keep the school progress going. We wanted to give kids after-school programs, because if they don't have them, then they get in trouble and their lives spiral down and everybody else suffers. So there's lots of after-school and summer kinds of things in there. We've got to keep fighting crime, so we kept the size of the police department and want to make sure there's a fire truck and an ambulance gets there quickly. We've kept that. So we've done a lot of things. We didn't do everything we wanted. And next year we'll probably going to have a bigger problem. Going to have to cut some more. But I think it's as responsible a budget. Now, some people say, oh, it's so much bigger than 10 years ago. Yeah, so is the city's population. And we do a lot of things for it. There is a reason why we have gotten back 200% of the private sector jobs lost during the recession, while the country's only gotten back 40%. Why? It's because we are supporting our cultural institutions. People want to come here. Tourists, 50 million tourists, that generates jobs. Businesses want to locate here. Where if you're a business and you want to attract talent, the fact that the city has a very significant environmental agenda is one of the key things to get young people to come here. They really care about this. You know, they learn this in school and they come. Well, where? New York. Yes, they care about the environment. And my company cares about the environment. That's what they want to do. You know, all these things. And it's been an investment and it's paying off. We have record population, record life expectancy, 3 years greater in the country.
My impression, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, is that this budget and the negotiations with the city council seems to have been the least contentious.
No, I mean, I think, you know, it's partly everybody's good faith. It's partly the leadership of the city council. Chris deserves a lot of credit because there's 50 people in addition to her in the city council, and everybody's got a different view. And, you know, it's like sort of like herding cats to try to get everybody together. And everybody's got to understand they'll get some things that they like and they'll have to suck it up for some things they don't. But that's what democracy is all about. So she deserves a lot of credit. Our staff, Mark Page and all of the deputy mayors and all the commissioners, finding ways to do more with less. And I don't know that it's, we've had an on-time budget every year since I came into office, and every year Chris is now going to be speaker. I guess she's in her seventh year. You know, we'll do the same thing next year. And the people are in the newspapers, they always want to have a fight, and they always want to talk about things that you don't do. And a lot of this stuff, you wait until the end because you've got to see what the revenues are going to be, and you've got to make trade-offs, and you've got to see if the agencies can't find ways to share resources and do more with less. We're working, for example, on carpooling to try to, you know, all of these things nobody sees. That's what Kaz Holloway's charge we're doing. You know, he's really done a lot in terms of reducing the expenses. So you wait until the end and they come together. And if people would just chill out, maybe it would be a better process if people didn't rush to the steps of City Hall and they're demanding and they give these speeches and hold the signs. That doesn't influence anybody. It just is a sideshow. The real answer is it a good program? And can we do we need it? And can we do it? Are we doing it as efficiently as we can? And is it more or less important than something else? And you don't learn anything, I don't think, from some of these stuff. A rational person coming in with a well thought out reason why, yes, that is useful. That's where the public should be doing, can be very helpful. But just yelling and screaming.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let me take a break here on the half hour at 8:31. Again, if you would. Bloomberg here on WOR, 23 before 9 o'clock. Again, I'll remind you, if you got a question, we got a couple of lines, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. The city council vetoed, overrode your veto of the living wage bill.
Said that was predictable.
Will it be predictable that you're going to do something further?
I have said we're going to sue, and we will sue.
Okay.
This is just not something that the city shouldn't dictate wages. We have, there's a national and a state minimum wage, and that's fine. But when one city starts competing with another on driving businesses out or attracting businesses in, it's just not productive for anybody. And it's fascinating. This was a bill that was held up until Fresh Direct signed their lease. And then the bill says only people that sign leases afterwards would this apply to, because Fresh Direct never would have come, or they would have gone to New Jersey if we'd had this bill. Does that tell you about the next company? I mean, this is just pandering to a handful of people who really think that the government can stop the tide from coming in. And we saw that that doesn't work very well. And in fact, the city's doing very well. But what we want to do is we want to create jobs, and we want to create good paying jobs. But some jobs are just don't, the economics of their businesses don't justify lots of benefits and high wages. And still, I'd rather have those jobs than not have them, because they are entry-level jobs and better than nothing. And people that say, well, if you can, if they can't afford those, they will afford them, they will pay higher if you make them. No, they won't. Some will, but an awful lot will just go elsewhere or not start a business or not expand.
Story this week about an appellate court that overturned a lower court on this Daryl Craig story, a 14-year-old with a gun, claiming that the stop and frisk was not correct.
As far as we can tell, the police officer followed every single rule and regulation and practice to the letter. He saw a kid put something in his pocket. It looked suspicious. He asked the kid to show it to him. It was a gun, a loaded gun. And the court, for reasons that I cannot imagine what was going through the minds of these justices, and incidentally, although it wasn't germane to that case, 3 months later, this kid got another gun, shot somebody twice, and was about to put a bullet through the guy's head when somebody yelled and screamed, and he ran away. It is, you cannot have safe streets if we're going to let everybody out. If you make the process of stopping, preventing so complex that nobody can do it, you're going to have loose control of the streets. And in this case, the cop did exactly what he was supposed
to do.
And
I would think as well, the message that is sent to the policeman on the street. Well,
what's he going to do? Yeah, he's not a lawyer. He doesn't have a bunch of staff to consult with. He can't say, stop everything. Let's go consult the law books and decide what. But it isn't even that. In this case, the cop didn't write. And it boggles the mind what on earth they were thinking about. The only thing I can think of must be a political reason that they wanted to do it, because on the facts, it just makes no sense whatsoever. And if we keep having these judges that let bad guys back out in the streets, I don't have a great solution.
This wasn't even a single judge. I think it was three wasn't
of them.
It?
I don't have a great solution for solving all of society's problems, long-term education and this, that, and the other thing. There's always another social program's going to fix everything. There are some kids, and we had yesterday a 14-year-old shot in the face, brain dead. Another 14-year-old. We've just got to stop this. And, people say, and the Civil Liberties Union is arguing that they're right on a lot of stuff. But if we don't have safe streets, all the other civil rights don't matter,
which we have proved over the years.
And
that safe streets, you saw what
you want to go to one of these other cities, you're twice as likely to get killed in Chicago, Boston, four times as likely to get killed in City X and whatever, Philadelphia, Detroit, you're eight or nine times as likely to get killed, New Orleans 10 times. Do you really want to go back to that? That's what we used to be, Murder Central, and we are doing as respectfully as you can and following the law as well as anybody can possibly in the real world understand it and do it. And there has to be a balance between all of our different civil rights. And one of the basic civil rights is to be able to walk down the street without getting blown away. And people say, there are other ways to do it. And Ray Kelly has said 1,000 times, fine, what are they? And somebody said, well, there's this program in Chicago. I forget what it's called. Chicago's murder rate is off the charts. Yeah. I feel sorry for Rahm Emanuel. He's just got to do something. He's trying as hard as anybody can. So that's not an answer. If people think they can carry guns, too many of these young kids, it's a rite of passage. It shows it's a macho thing. And they're going to do it unless they understand they're likely to get caught. And that's what this is all about. And if we were to have stop and frisk and never retrieve a gun, that would be the ultimate vindication of the program. That would say it's really working. So there's people that say, well, you're getting fewer guns. Yes, it's like collecting cigarette taxes. Wouldn't it be wonderful if there's no cigarette taxes coming in? People would live a lot longer, and we'd have to find another source of revenue. But, you know, what these three judges were thinking about, I don't know. I mean, it's an independent third part of the government, but sometimes some people act in ways we don't understand.
You have been very successful over the 2.5 terms that you've been mayor, but one thing that has vexed you, and we've been talking about it right from the very beginning, is the garbage situation, and it continues to be problematic. Out in Whitestone by LaGuardia, there's people that want that transfer station not to go into effect, and now up on 91st Street, the same situation.
Look, both will get done. Yeah, the bottom line is we generate 22,000 tons of solid waste a day in this city. And you can't just pile it up on the sidewalk, okay? So you got to get rid of it. How you get it out of the city, it makes sense to use the waterways rather than a lot more trucks, which trap traffic and pollute the air. We've got to have every borough taking care of their own. It's got to be equal. Sending all of our trash to Staten Island is the way they used to do it. This day and age, we're not going to do it. Staten Island has to worry about their trash, and so does every other borough. The one on 91st Street is very contentious, but the design is such that it's not going to hurt the neighborhood, and it's got to go someplace, and there's no other logical place for it in Manhattan. We have to have one here. The logical place, everybody says, is somebody else's neighborhood. Well, it can't be.
Anybody.
And we used to have one. We had a transfer station there for an awful long time, and it certainly didn't hurt the neighborhood.
That's true for the LaGuardia site as well.
The LaGuardia site, this is the geese. There were a whole bunch of people, actually, that we expected thousands. I think there were 18 or 12 that showed up outside my house protesting the killing of geese, which I don't think the city does. I think it's the state or the Port Authority, somebody. But anyways, because they are dangerous. The geese
out
are...
Out at Kennedy and...
right, yeah. And they are
the
dangerous.
Seagulls are the garbage problem, which is not the geese.
Number one, we had it never bothered LaGuardia before. Waste transfer station was there for a long time. Number two, now it is all sealed, so there's no... The Army Corps of Engineers and the FAA have no problem with it, and it's got to go someplace, and that's almost done, and that will open too, and, you know... it will get a lot of trucks. It's easy to say, well...
Do you have any part of this new plan of contained, wrapped garbage that we've been talking about forever? Is any of it in place? I mean, is the system not up and working, is it?
Well, you know, it's contained in the sense that you go in and the building is all contained and it goes into a thing,
but,
and then it gets covered.
But these transfer stations, do
I don't know whether any of the new ones are open yet.
All right.
But we're getting close.
I know they're in process.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's see here.
And incidentally, it's not great. Got a better alternative?
Yeah, let me know.
Right.
Yeah, send me a note.
Thanks.
A judge ruled in the favor of the city on the number of handicapped taxis or taxis.
Judge says we're not discriminating, and it's not up to us. If the taxi industry, you could sue the taxi industry, I suppose, but the judge says we're acting appropriately.
Okay. All right. There you go. Do you think that will be, have you any indication that will be... Further litigation?
No, I mean, bill that the governor's legislature passed and the governor signed, there's a requirement for X number of handicap accessible things. We've always argued that having a real system where somebody who is handicapped and needs a wheelchair, if you make a phone call and have somebody come, because just the logistics of hailing down somebody and the real world of taxi drivers probably wouldn't stop. anyways into making them stop. But, you know, you can say yes, but you can say the tide shouldn't come in. It's still going to come in, and this is just the way some people behave. And we really have worked hard to try to make sure that handicapped people get the same access that everybody else does. But there is a practical aspect of, you know, if you're in a wheelchair, it's harder to run out in the middle of the street between cars and flag down a cab. And so you have to find some other ways where they can get a cab. And I thought we had have the right balance.
All right, the story about the Ferris wheel in Staten Island at the end of the Staten Island Ferry. I think it's a great idea.
Well, one of the things which for the city is would be good is if there are lots of, for example, cultural institutions on Staten Island, getting people to go and to use them.
It'd be a real magnet, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
if you could expand it further than just the Ferris.
The main tourist access to Staten Island is the Staten Island Ferry. It's a
Price is Right.
Price is Right, and at night it's very romantic, and that's what I think. There is a small minor league baseball stadium there, Richmond County Stadium, and that's nice. But most people that go there would probably come from Staten Island. The real tourist attraction is getting is the ferry over. And then what you want to do is find other things for people to do. This would be great. It sounds like a good idea. Whether or not it's going to be done with private money. There is land there for it. The one in London is phenomenally successful. The one in London is for people that don't understand. They're
this is not
cars.
Like a Coney Island Ferris
no.
wheel, though.
That you can get 15 or 20 people in each of those cars. People have parties. They rent it, and it takes...
I've been on it. It's really wonderful.
How long does it take to go around?
Oh.
45 minutes?
Oh, yeah. It's a long time. It's at least a half an hour.
Right. Probably. And so you get great views, and you have, you know, wine and beer and...
air conditioned?
Air conditioned. Probably can't have a grill for hot dogs, hamburgers, but you could bring some cheese or sandwiches along. You know. So it's a great idea. Hopefully it gets done. It'd be nice.
I hope so as well. Are there other things like that? I mean, you know... sort of fun things like that that are on the tables being considered. I know you and I years ago talked about a gondola that would go across Governor's
Yeah,
Island.
That would be for transportation. And also that would be a tourist thing. I always thought that was Dr. Off's idea, and I always thought it was a great idea. The permitting, because it goes over water and everything looked like it was just insurmountable. But somebody down the road should take that on as a project. I'd love to help support it. I've always thought it'd be a great investment because so many people would use it coming from Brooklyn, like the Red Hook area. It would stop in Governor's Island, but it would continue to Lower Manhattan, and it would be the fastest ways to get over, and it would be a great ride.
And from a tourist point of view and or a casual use, you could stop at Governor's
Island.
And
the commuting stuff. So, you know, if you could do it and you could charge market rate rather than having the city come in and say, oh, it has to be available to everybody, and, you know, the owner should subsidize public transportation or the city would take it over, like the MTA. Keep in mind, the subways were originally all private companies and competed with each other, which is why a lot of them...
Why they went out of business.
And also why there's a lot of service in some neighborhoods and not in others. When they saw there was business, they all built them to go the same place instead of, if you were designing a system-wide from scratch, you would have done something different. But... you know, there's a lot of all these projects, a whole bunch of them are going. You know, the park system is a big part of it, too.
The primary was held on Tuesday, and from what I read this morning, we're still counting, or the election committee is still counting votes. Is this the silliest thing in this day of instant communication?
Somebody argued that we should not use computers to record votes, because computers can be hacked. So instead, the way it works now is papers come out, they cut it literally, they cut them in pieces with a scissors, then they pass them around, and then they count and they add them up. It is the most easily corruptible system in a day and age where you shouldn't get in a car, and you certainly shouldn't get in an airplane or anything else that moves if you don't believe in computers and epoxy resins, which hold everything together. I mean, it's just... But anyways, there was yelling and screaming. It had to be paper. You couldn't trust anything else. And I don't know what was wrong with our voting system before. They said you couldn't get parts. Well, you could start a company and make the parts for it. But the old voting machines, now everybody there, you have this piece of paper, and everybody can look over your shoulders. And you got to hunch yourself over.
My word, asinine. Just ridiculous.
Your word, but couldn't be more right. Can you wait until there's a real election that's close, and then the yelling and screaming? And we finally settled for a congressional seat, which is going away. has been redistricted, and it took months. And you wait and see the next one. It's just going
to
be...
All right, Mr. Mayor. We got a handful of phone calls to get to. Let us do that in just a moment. All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here, and you are on the telephone. Mr. Mayor, let's start things off here right at the top of the list here. And Jan in Manhattan, you got the mayor. Go ahead, Jan.
Oh, thank you, Mayor.
Hi.
I want to thank you for your personal service to the city.
Well, you're nice to say so. It's a great job. If you ever get a chance to be mayor, do it.
Thank you. I work and live in Lower Manhattan. I'm a physician. My wife and I have three kids. I purchased essentially a three-bedroom apartment there in the 1999. And recently, I had the fortitude to look at my tax bill, and it's $54,000 for this fiscal year. And next year, it's going to go up to $63,000. Essentially, when I retire, I will not be able to live in my apartment because I cannot afford it. And at this point, to sell it, I certainly wouldn't buy an apartment that I have to pay $63,000 in annual taxes.
What? Yeah, Jan, if you're paying that much, it must be worth a lot of money. The taxes are basically set based on assessed value, although there's a gap, there's a cap on how much your taxes can go up each year, another cap on how much they can go up every five years. And what's happened is, even though property values in some places in New York City have gone down, because the assessments were way behind, taxes are still going up. Let me tell you this. Property taxes in New York City are lower than for a given property than they are elsewhere, because we also have a sales tax, and we also have a business tax, and we also have an income tax and all that sort of thing. So New York City is less dependent on its property taxes than other places. If you went to other states or other cities, you would see a much higher tax. There's no evidence that people are leaving the city. One of the problems, one of the reasons your apartment is worth so much, is that lots of people want to live here. These are market rate prices. And the truth of the matter is, New York City has a record high population. There are some people who leave, and particularly when they retire. I understand that you're not the only one that says, how am I going to pay these kind of taxes when I don't have any income coming in? And unfortunately, some people do leave because of it, or go to smaller apartments maybe because their kids are off and hopefully have jobs in their own apartments. Well, sometimes they don't. Nobody likes taxes. It certainly doesn't help anything. But if we want to have safe streets and emergency response when you need it, and the schools for your kids and cultural institutions and clean streets, that's where the money comes from.
That's how it gets done. All right, we move to line five. Okay, line five, and that's going to be Al. Go ahead, Al.
Yes, good morning, Mayor. Good morning, John. Speaking of judges, on Fox News, there's a judge, Napolitano, who says that the 16-ounce limitation on the soda is unconstitutional because it violates the Commerce Clause. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems to me that that the judge, and as well as the other legal experts on Fox News, as usual, do not know what they're talking about.
Well, I can't say as usual. I don't know. I don't have a lot of time to watch television. It is... Number one, we're not banning soda. Number two, this has been all of these things, whether it is, for example, the smoking bill where you can't smoke where other people have to work and that sort of thing. There's list after list of things requiring seat belts, speed limits. There's lots of ways that the government regulates behavior, and they've all been held that it's appropriate for the government to do it. In this case, Al, it is... that the proposed rule, and it's got to be as a comment period, and then it would have to be approved by the Board of Health, simply says that in restaurants and movie theaters, not stores, because the city doesn't regulate stores, but restaurants and movie theaters and street carts, you cannot use for full sugar drinks a cup that holds more than 16 ounces. If you want to buy or sell 32 ounces, you can do it in two cups. If you want to do 64 ounces, you can do it in four cups. It's simply a size of a cup that would be regulated. And the idea is that maybe because people tend to drink what's in front of them, eat what's in front of them, you'd think twice before you have another one. We've got to do something about obesity. And this is a very big problem. And it's not just the soda companies, and in all fairness, some of these soda companies, Coke and PepsiCo, are trying to do things because they understand down the road this is going to become a very big issue across the country, and they are. Coke,
is there a bill that is written and been sent to the city council?
No, there's no. This has nothing to do with the city council. This is appropriate for the Department of the Board of Health. Administered, and then the process.
And has it been implemented? Or
no, there's a comment period, and then they have to approve it. Who knows where they will, although they're likely to. A lot of people on that board think you should go a lot further. There are proposals to tax full sugar drinks. We tax cigarettes, and that gets kids and adults even, but mainly kids, to stop smoking. That's good. You know, taxes, you like the revenue, but really they're there to dissuade or influence behavior. This will, I assume, pass, and this is the lightest thing. A lot of other cities are trying to ban full sugar drinks or something. This is going to, 6,000 people will die in New York City this year from the effects of obesity, only 7,000 from smoking. Smoking's coming down. Obesity is skyrocketing across the country. It's going to bankrupt us.
All right. Wednesday, 4th of July, fireworks.
Macy's, 9 o'clock, Hudson River, going to be spectacular. Thank you, Macy's. Another thing great corporate citizen does for the city, the parade on Thanksgiving and the fireworks, known around the world.
All right, Mr. Mayor, happy 4th of July. We'll
you
catch
too.
Up with you in a couple of weeks. I'll be off next Friday. It's 9 o'clock. Stick around. Lots to go.
74 degrees at 9 o'clock.